three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Tuesday, 1st of September. I'm here in Sydney. This is Joseph, and I've got Andrew joining me. Today, we're talking about a whole bunch of stuff. The Matt Hodgson decisions have just come through. We've got a whole bunch of listener questions that we're going to talk about. But first, Andrew, say hello.
Yeah, hello. It's good to be back. It's been a while since we've done one of these. I hope we remember how to do it. I think we just gasbag about NBL basketball for a while and call it a show, right?
Life's gotten in the way. Exactly. We just top and tail it with some music and
job done.
And then berate people for not being patrons, which I'm going to do now. If you like the show or you listen to the show, become a patron. We'd appreciate that. I'm not going to go into the depths of it, but we'd really appreciate it. And to the 25 or so who do, they've sent us a bunch of stuff to do, and now they're getting screen time. So yeah, it works out, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's a worthwhile investment. If you're looking at it and you're saying, do I do Bitcoin? Do I do Patreon? The answer is easy. NBL Pocket Podcast, Patreon.
We got a bunch of questions. We got something from Jackson McDonald, who works for Inner Sanctum. I think his Twitter handle is at jmcdonald91, perhaps. I hope I'm getting that right.
Yep.
It's on there. Find him on Twitter. He's going to be closing out the show. We're talking about Adelaide, as I said. Matt Hodgson, that decision is just, it's like fresh in our email. Came out maybe 5 minutes ago. So we're going to go through the decisions on the fines in Sydney. But before we launch into any NBL stuff, I do want to quickly talk about two things. Firstly is the Zach Lowe podcast. Andrew, I sent you a message in the week. I was like, you should really listen to the first 5.5 minutes of Zach Lowe's latest NBA podcast. This is not about NBA as to why we were attracted to it. He tells a very beautiful story about this book called Chicken Soup for the Sporting Fan Soul. It's a lovely story and it made me feel good. I told you about it, Andrew. What was your reaction when you listened to it?
Yeah, I didn't really know. You didn't give me a lot away, so I didn't quite know what I was going to be listening to. I was thinking I might be hearing some breaking news about a G League player that was moving to the NBL or something. But no, it was a heartfelt story about really, I guess, why we do this stuff. You know, how do I summarize? Like,
or do anything.
We do it because you love it and it's meaningful and it matters to you. You know, you don't do it for the money necessarily. You don't do it for the fame and adulation. You do it because it's enjoyable and it delivers something.
And this Zach Lowe thing for people there is he was just describing how his mother was the subject of the chapter in this book and she was the hero of that story and she's now suffered a stroke and it was really touching. I didn't actually listen to the rest of the podcast.
Neither did I.
Another 2 minutes and didn't bother. That was the best bit of it. So I encourage people, this is really just I liked something, you should check it, or we liked something, you should check it out. So the first 5.5 minutes of that podcast, listen to it. The second thing I want to talk about is Andrew does another podcast called Hemispheric Views, which is very good. It's about tech and software programs. If you're into that kind of stuff.
Culture as well, mate. Culture. Culture. Don't forget the culture. It's not all tech nerdery.
It's about North and Southern Hemisphere stuff. There's Americans on it, Australians on it. My favorite conversation, sorry to detract, was when you guys were talking about the TV show Pawn Stars, as in P-A-W-N, and how that made great sense in the Southern Hemisphere, a country where the show has been exported to, because we say porn as in the sexual stuff and porn as in porn something off the same way. But in the Northern Hemisphere, in the US, where the show was created, they'd say pawn.
Yes.
So the pun doesn't work as well in its country of origin. And there was a very, very good conversation. So Hemispheric Views. But
tackle the big issues.
Why have I brought up Hemispheric Views this time?
Well, you're either going to promote the latest show or you're going to talk about a terrible podcasting host provider situation. I don't know which.
And
pick your poison.
Well, I'm going with Andrew. The gang at Hemispheric Views have taken it off Spotify because of sort of COVID misinformation, I suppose Joe Rogan stuff. And the question really comes, should we leave this show up on Spotify? And I'll just throw to you, Andrew, now, make the case, what should we do?
Okay, so I think we should take it off. If you're serious about podcasts, you're going to be using a proper podcast player. You're not going to be listening to it on Spotify in the first place. Okay, podcasts are designed to be free and open. Spotify is attempting to build a walled garden around those. So that's your first reason, right? That's just a technical, you know, podcast based on RSS corporate feeds, you know, open standard. Spotify is attempting to control that world. And if it wasn't for the open web, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast. We don't need gatekeepers. More importantly, however, they pay Joe Rogan like $100 million to say and do basically whatever he wants. And some of those things are just blatantly wrong and irresponsible. And he gets people on the show to say wrong and irresponsible things, particularly around COVID, obviously, at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And I just think you if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Okay, Einstein, so why support a company that is knowingly funding the distribution of misinformation of which society suffers from, because you get a percentage of people who believe the stuff and make it difficult for everybody else to have immunity from COVID, you know, like herd immunity. Why are we allowing that? And why do we just stand by and let it happen? So in our own little way, we've pulled the plug on Spotify, and there's still plenty of ways to get our show.
I think that's all well. I'm going to try and make the case to leave it on. Okay. And my only case I'd say is Spotify is a great, pretty good tool. As much as it funds Joe Rogan, and it does, who I don't even listen to him, I suppose I trust the average man to listen to it and ignore it, or listen to it and think, oh, that was entertaining, but you know, I'm going to lean on the experts. I don't think Joe Rogan is fooling anyone who didn't want to be fooled in the first place. I think he just reaffirms cognitive bias.
Yep.
And then I guess the other thing Spotify does, and you've mentioned that point about it kind of putting a paywall up and things like that. I'm not so familiar with that, but one thing Spotify does do is it makes all this amazing content, beautiful music from classical, jazz, rock, all that stuff, makes it all available. You know, before you would have just simply struggled to get your hands on it. It is a museum of music, or a sort of conservatorium of culture. Or am I being too philosophical about Spotify and our content?
I've always just thought of it as a business.
It's got this catalog where you go into a museum, most of that stuff stolen from a tomb somewhere, and but it still has merit as far as preserving stuff. So I can see the benefit. Yeah. I haven't made up my mind about this. We very well might take it off. I'm not sure.
Let's see what the audience has to say about it. So
yeah.
Tweet us at NBL Pocket Pod, at Andrew Canyon. Just let us know. What do you think? Email us.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yep, do indeed. Speaking of fan feedback, I think this was directed more at you, Andrew. You take it from one of our patrons.
Yeah, so this is the one from our friend Adam.
Mm-hmm.
I get performance anxiety every time I have to say his surname now.
go for it.
So Adam Westerhout, hope I did that right. He left us a voicemail message. Should we let him play it now?
Hey, Andrew and Joe, just one of your patrons, Adam Westerhout. That's right, Andrew. That's how it's pronounced, just like the word without, Westerhout. That's how it's done. Dropping you a line because I had a chat to Andrew about an opinion I had. Could be controversial, but I think Luke Travers is a young Thomas Abercrombie, and that could potentially be his ceiling. I hope it isn't, because I hope he can do big things in the NBA, but realistically, could Luke Travers' ceiling be a Thomas Abercrombie for the Perth Wildcats, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, but yeah, would love to hear your thoughts on that.
The answer to this Travers Abercrombie thing, Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really good comparison. And I think this question was submitted to us, well, maybe a bit more than a week ago, right? Certainly before the two games that we've just seen Travers play more recently, where he's shooting over from the 3-point line. He's not ready for NBA. I've never really understood the NBA hype around Luke Travers. I see but then again, the NBA is a weird thing, and they look at tremendous upside potential and, you know, what tools does a guy have and what potential does he bring, rather than is he actually good or not. I don't think he's good enough for the NBA. I think particularly with his shooting yips now, he's definitely not good enough for the NBA. And I think there's no shame in being a really good NBL player. It's just the modern narrative of these kids growing up. It's all about wanting to be in the NBA, and they really push hard. I think to be a really good Tom Abercrombie and have a great career in the NBL is nothing to be sneezed at.
I agree. Friend of the show, Jackson McDonald, would argue differently. I mean, Usman Dieng is still in draft boards, I think around the 25, 35 kind of range.
Yep.
I think we both agree Travis is not only a better player than he is now, but probably a more NBA-tooled player. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, well, they're probably equivalently bad from the three-point line.
Exactly.
They've both got impressive hairstyles. Travis.
Dieng's worse. Travis is a bit older, though.
Travis is a much better rebounder, has more strength. Yep. Yeah, he's obviously been in the gym a bit longer and looks more controlled and composed on the court.
I think in answer to this question, I feel like ginning for the draft, I honestly believe it is such a commercial process. I think if you've got a few tools and a bit of buzz and the right circumstances, like drafted by the right team or just the faith in you from the right people, you're good to go. Travis is with Octagon, formerly Lighthouse, which is Moldovan. Moldovan, who's an amazing agent, did look no further than Josh Giddey. Amazing process.
Yep.
Can Travers get? I just think from day one he's taken the wrong advice. I've heard rumors that Travers listens not so much to Moldovan as he does others.
Right.
In where he went, and I think that the mistake of I think he's from Rockingham.
Yep.
I think to play for the Wildcats, if your real ambition, if your goal of goals is to make the NBA, you don't want to play for the Perth Wildcats because they're going to have Cotton who gets the ball at every play. And they're going to have a second import who's fantastic. I mean, they recruited right over the top of him. I mean, Vic Law is the import Luke Travers.
Yep.
Big body, 3-4, inside-outside,
yep.
Who's obviously shooting a lot.
Can shoot the three. Yep.
Whereas Travers is, they're not just thinking we're a team that, 35 years of making the playoff, whatever, we just want to see you succeed. That's never, the Wildcats are not a huge development team in the same way that an Adelaide has become. You know, those smaller teams that aren't as,
Cairns.
There's not as much on the line. Yeah. Cairns. I mean, Melbourne are a bit of the outlier this season, but, smaller teams, there's just not the winning pressure. So, but in answer to Adam is, I think the comp is very good, bar the three-point shooting, but I still think Travis has got NBA body. I look at the length and the physicality and I think, he just needs someone to take a flyer, that slight bit of confidence. But I can't deny what Mr. Westerhout has put forward.
It's a good comparison.
It is indeed. We're going to jump onto another question.
Yep.
This one is from Tristan. I hope I can bring it up here. I've got it on my...
I've got it here. If
sent to us via Twitter. Oh, you
like
do?
For me to read it?
Yeah, read it out. Go for it.
I'll read it. You answer it, maybe. With the influx of new, generally younger coaches in the league this season... Are we likely to see a trend towards the more modern G League style of game? And do you feel that some of the uniqueness of our league as a destination will be lost?
This is really a two-part question. I liked it. So thanks to Tristan for sending this one in. Younger coaches and American coaches, there is definitely, I think it's pretty palpable and pretty obvious that the NBL wants to sidle itself as NBA light, NBLX, NBA, you know, they want to have that reputation.
Yep.
As far as G League style goes, G League, I don't watch a lot of it.
I don't even know if G League has a style other than don't play defense and pad your stats. I think that's
and guys show their individual talent, like, oh, he's a rebounder.
Yeah.
He'll help as a 11th man in our roster because we've had an injury. Or he can shoot three. We'll get him. He can plug a 10th man hole. I don't think it's actually a style of game. I don't think it's actually a league that people watch. At all, unless you know, there's those really small market teams like Idaho, Boise. Maybe even then, I don't think they go out to it. I think it is really a totally, wholly and solely, can players on this team fill an 8th to 12th man role on an NBA team?
Yep.
The funny thing, part of this question I liked is the uniqueness of our league, and I want to throw this to you now, Andrew. I mean, the idea of playing like up-tempo pace, we just haven't seen it this season. I mean, this has been as NBL as it's become. Below the rim for the most part, really strong defense. Refs are letting guys play really tough and physical. We've seen a fight just happen.
Yep.
I thought there was going to be a big G League style come in. I just don't think it's been that way at all. I think defense has been the way that teams have won so far. Look at Melbourne United. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I disagree with this slightly. I think Sydney have shown a bit of, you know, a willingness to run and, you know, take the first shot on offer. And if it's three, that's or, true. You know, go with it.
And miss it. Take the first shot and miss it, yeah.
Perth have obviously been a big change. And I think you're seeing a lot more NBA style with them as well. And in response, I would say I don't like it. I think it's less interesting watching these coaches come out and apply their approach to our league. It just doesn't make for really enjoyable games, I don't think. It depends what you're after, really, I guess. You know, if you want to see a lot of threes hoisted up and, you know, quick ball movement and not a lot of structure, then it's probably better. For me, I'm old, right? So I've got some differing views. And I sort of still think you've got coaches like, you know, we've had Chase Buford and Morrison come into the league and stuff, James Duncan to an extent. Well, we've got good Australian coaches just sitting around, not getting a look in. Yeah. And I think that's the bigger disappointment in all this. What is the Australian style? We don't get a chance to see it.
Right. The word I want to focus on for Tristan is uniqueness. And I think, like, you look at Cal Bruton, come in, Wildcats, run, stun, have fun. Well, that's a G League style. And that was not as successful, but worked. And I haven't had the chance to go back and look at, you know, scoring averages or pace averages from, you know, 1985 through 1995. I haven't had the chance to do that. But I look at that word uniqueness. And to me, the uniqueness of the league is not really the style of play. Australia's third best country in the world by FIBA rankings, and play is a style. I don't think the style of play is so different from those other places. I don't think it's the style of play that dictates Australian basketball. I think it's the people in the league. I think it's the way it's dressed. I think there is an issue with uniqueness in the uniforms. Like they're an American parrot. Why not have something different? The American, like the logos, you know, like why only there's the Taipans. I mean, Perth, bless them, they're called the Wildcats. Do you know how many college teams are called the Wildcats and so on? It's not, you know, so the uniqueness to me is what comes out through the character of those involved and also the presentation of the product. I don't think it's the style of play. I honestly think it's what the commentators say at beginning of the game and halftime and the, you know, how relaxed you're going to be about fan interaction. Are you going to have a barbecue at half court? That to me is the uniqueness of the NBL, not necessarily the style of play. Do you see what I mean, Andrew? Okay. Or do you agree?
Yeah, I think I see what you mean. It's the way it's wrapped and presented.
Yeah, like the Illawarra Hawks, I don't feel they make enough of a show about having their court, their stadium, literally a 10-minute walk from the beach. Like it's right there.
Yeah.
Such a catch cry. It could be so much fun and like beach meets basketball. You know, people in the stands wearing Hawaiian shirts and sandals. Yep. They do a little bit of that, but I kind of... You know, if you saw the game on TV, you'd be like, oh, is this a college game in Texas or is this in Wollongong? You could be mistaken.
Yep. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's just something. Let's go to another
We have stacked questions. I love it. I love the interaction, so I'm not complaining. What's the next one?
This one's from Kyle. Who would you rather be, Scott Morrison or Chase Buford? Both teams have a lot of pressure for different reasons. Also, both seem to have a NBA G League game plan that doesn't seem to be translating that well to the NBL.
Yep.
First part of what I want to ask you about, Andrew, is do you agree with the second part of that statement, which is they have an NBA G League game plan that isn't translating so well to the NBL?
Absolutely. That backs up what I was saying before. Yeah. It isn't working particularly well. And I think, you know, so you could, people will say, oh, but look, Perth are, you know, top of the ladder, you know, near the top of the ladder, just had their third loss, I think it was. Surely that's well. Yeah, if you watch them play, they are clunky, really clunky. So to answer the question, would I rather be Buford or Morrison? I think I'd rather be Morrison because I'm sitting on a 3-year contract, a team that has an established identity before me anyway, runs on the board, and you still have a veteran core that you can rely upon. So I would rather be Morrison as opposed to Buford, who is got the latest grab bag of Sydney Kings players. He's got an owner that's probably a headache to deal with. So I'm going to pass on Buford, although he is in the Hoops capital. So there is that.
Wow. Who would I rather be? I'd rather be Scott Morrison for the simple fact of you've got Cotton and Vic Law. You've got Bryce Cotton under contract for, I think, 2 more years.
I think so.
So you've got the best player in the league. That's a pretty big draw card. Buford's not far behind. Sydney look better. also expectations are lower. So if you're both just thinking, I just want to serve my 3 years, do as best I can, get my money and see where it takes me next, Buford's in a pretty good spot. Sydney have a good track record of bouncing coaches and players back to the US. So that's a positive if that's their prerogative or their interest. Paul Smith, I think, is an owner who is, to his credit, is focused on, he's a people first person. I think he takes care of his personnel, maybe sometimes at the expense of the fan, which is, if you're Buford, you're thinking, great, you know?
Yep.
You know, because when a player leaves their club for the NBA, like Tate, they're like, bon voyage.
Yeah.
We loved you. Thank you. They're not the Wildcats. You know, I remember when Cotton pulled out of that contract. Whoa. People weren't going, good on you, bro. Good luck to you. They were like, you motherfucker. It was not pleasant. So for that reason, but only the nose am I taking Scott Morrison. Because if you're a basketball coach, you want the best team and the best players, and the better team is Perth. Yep. Sorry, Sydney.
Yep.
But as far as the G League plan not translating, had a chat today with someone in the NBL. Like, Perth have been killed in the first quarters.
Yes.
And this is a person who was high up in coaching ranks. And he just said teams have shot well against them in the first quarter. Not a result of they haven't, you know, they've actually just been outshot from the 3-point line in first quarters.
Mm.
And that is it's surprising. Mm. Yeah, it's surprising that it's happened so routinely. But the fact that they've been down was of no concern or surprise to him. And this is not a Wildcat person. So I do lean on that a little bit, where I'm like, they do seem to finish games very strong, and they're out of that Kings game and came right back, and it just didn't quite happen. So as far as the G League NBA style not translating, I say I'm still deciding on that one.
Okay.
Sea Kings has sent us – this is the last of the questionnaires. Thank you so much to everyone sending them in. Keep coming, and we love them.
Yep.
This one's a recording, and we will play it now.
Hello again, Joseph and Andrew. Just curious to hear your thoughts. Are the Kings the most punchable team in the NBL? Thanks for the awesome content. Appreciate you guys, Deeps. All the best, fellas. Your underwater mate, Sydney C. King.
My immediate gut reaction is, of course they are. Right? That's just, I've been conditioned.
Who's second? I'll ask you that.
I've been conditioned for so long. I think Adelaide might be second. Or maybe
why
Melbourne. Maybe Melbourne.
Yeah. I'm going to make the case for Melbourne in a second.
I'm just going to stick to the winner, right? Yeah, the Kings are the most punchable team. God, they've got everything about them is just they think they're better than they are. They're like the kid that has they're like the rich kid that actually isn't that great a kid, but he's got all the money so he can buy the latest Sony PlayStation, you know. And have you seen 8-Bit Christmas? He's like that kid, right?
I thought you were going to say they're like that team that plays the Sandlot kids at their own, really, you know, the Sandlot movie.
Oh, vaguely.
Oh, it's baseball, and there's the ragtag group of kids that, you know, are made up from kids from the neighborhood, and then they play this really posh team.
Oh, as like, okay, yeah,
you know, uniforms,
yeah,
and they get beaten badly. I there's that. Now I'm going to make the case for Melbourne. I think punchable.
Chris Golding. There's the end of your argument.
Okay, no, not even. That's a factor. But punchable. To me, the Kings is punching down a little bit. Like, they haven't won enough. To me, if you're going to punch someone, I like to punch a bully. A fight you may not win. And I think the fight against the Kings, you probably would be more likely to win.
Yep.
Melbourne, you know, center of basketball. That they are, you know, despite not winning as much as Perth, they have a huge influence and control over the league.
Mm.
Not in a bad way, but, you know, in a way they do. And I like to take on the bully. So when you're talking about punchable, to me, I'm kind of like, that's the team,
right?
You know, they're the ones I want to headhunt. So Melbourne, and you know, they play a level of defense that other teams aren't allowed to do. I don't think I'm speaking out of school there. They play a defense that's real scraggy, real tough. They drag games down. I mean, that Adelaide game was fun.
It's like the old days of Perth versus New Zealand, you know, when they...
Yeah, brutal.
Yep.
Brutal. That Adelaide game was fun, but only because Dusty Hannah's and a few things happened. But the standard was... It was... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Muck and Mire. So that's my answer to that one.
Do you know...
And you've got
Yeah, you know who thinks the Kings are the most punchable team?
Who's that?
Matt Hodgson.
All right, let's talk about this. Have you got the email in front of you?
I do. We've got the game review panel findings.
This came out at what time? We received this 7, email.
7:10 my time, so that's 50 minutes ago.
you take that first bit. I'll just say quickly, Hodgson, it's interesting that they're going to give details tomorrow, but you read it. What does it say?
I know. So basically they've handed out the sanctions. The big one we want to know about, Matt Hodgson, charged with striking twice and engage in melee brawl. He's been referred directly to a single member tribunal. Details on the tribunal hearing will be provided tomorrow. That to me does not sound good.
It sounds really bad, I think. And then when you look at the next one, we'll compare it to that. So Xavier Cooks is the next name off, I think, because he got the second worst charge.
Yep.
Was charged with engaging in a melee brawl. As this was his second offense, Cook has been issued with a $1,000 fine, but accepted $750 with an early guilty plea.
Yep.
And then I'll go quickly. Jarrell Martin, $500 fine down to $375. Wani, $500 down to $375. Jalen Adams, $500 down to $375.
Yeah,
but Hodgson, what do you think he's going to get?
I think he's going to get games. I'd say maybe three or four games. It's a weird one because I saw some conversation on Twitter about what's the comparison, and the best comparison I saw brought up was the Childress Jesse Wagstaff flying elbow. And I think
what did he get for that?
I think he got maybe one game. I can't remember what the answer was now, but I think it was maybe a game that was a fine vicious. Or something.
That was worse.
But that was
you think Childress?
Yeah, but it was a different era, you know. And that was an epic hit. Like it was such a good hit that you kind of didn't want to punish it to it because it was just so cool.
See? He really ricocheted. Yeah, it was a cheap shot to the back of the head. This one, I think the fact that it went into the stands,
I think
that would really. Piss people, especially front row seats,
and it was. But the way he did, like, can I tee off on Matt?
Yeah, yeah, do it.
This is what a muppet, what an absolute idiot, right? You're standing there with nobody around you except a referee, and Vasiljevic gives him a bit of lip, and who knows what had been said beforehand? But come on, it's not the first time you had a bit of, a bit of talking back and forth on the court. So he goes to. He goes the bitch slap on him. Vasiljevic, in typical style, that says, "Come on, mate, give us another one." This is classics. This is
custard. Yeah.
It's in the playground at school when the teacher's there on duty and right behind you, and you know you've been hit, and you're like, "Go on, mate, come on," and you play, and Hodgson fell for it and just went again, looked at the referee, and went, "No, I'll have another one." Like just stupid. And it calls into question a lot of what the Wildcats now are.
Oh, you think that? I think you're overreaching, but go on, let's hear your point. I'm excited to hear this.
Okay, so for the last 10 years, they've been building this culture of, we respect the game, but we follow the bloodline and all this kind of rah-rah. It's, it's all about playing the right way, being tough, but being fair and respecting the decision. You know, there's this whole culture thing that the Wildcats overlay on what they do. If he's done that, he either hasn't been indoctrinated in the culture enough.
Yeah, right.
Or inculcated, indoctrinated, or that culture isn't there anymore.
Ooh, I disagree. I really quite disagree with that because all you had to do was look at mistake was made. What did the Wildcats do? No one else threw a punch. You know, the Sydney Kings were like, they were like the Philippines. Okay, here we come. Bang. How Buford got away with a fine. Holy moly. Oh, anyway.
He was right in there, wasn't he? Peacemaker.
He was there. Peacemaker. Yeah, right. Same way that – who was a peacemaker in that movie? Was it Randy Quaid? Dennis Quaid shooting people? Anyway, what happened after that? None of the Wildcats are fined. None of them got involved in the brawl.
Yeah.
Or at least none of them fined for their part in it. They got back together. They came as a group. Okay. We all saw that. All right. 10-0 run and got right back in the game. So I don't think the culture's the issue because walkout basketball and winning basketball, same thing. They're interchangeable. And for that team to just be like, yep, that happened. We change, we focus, we shift and move on. I was actually impressed by it in a funny way, the response from the actual players. And Matt Hodgson is a bit player in this season. I think like they get enough out of Majuk. He's trick or treat, whatever they can get out of him, great. And if not, oh well. Oh, he's got four fouls. Okay. Majuk's in or, Law slides up. I don't actually think it's a huge bearing as that. But as far as what happened, who knows what was said? I actually don't think it could have been anything that bad. I think he got totally baited.
Mm.
And, you know, if you listen to the Brad and Body podcast, there's a lot going on. I think he's got a new kid, locked out of WA, da, da, da. I can sympathize with it. And I can sympathize with it. And I think he's looking at, what, 2 to 4 weeks. I think probably the lower end of that.
Yep.
I if he got three, I'd be sort of like, that's harsh but fair.
Yep.
Because, and then the fact that it fell into people and really quite forced, that's a bad look.
Yeah.
So I think they'll throw the book at him pretty bad.
And I think for the Wildcats perspective, I don't think they lose a lot him being out. They look better. Like, he was out in the beginning of the season with injuries and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I liked their look because Majuk knew where he stood. He was getting some good court time and was doing, you know, what he could. He was, you know, low post back downs and rebounding. And he knew that he wasn't going to get dragged if he made a mistake. I think maybe it could work out well for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it worked out for them after that. They did go on a 10-0 run immediately after that or soon thereafter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I did see Bryce Cotton, like, bringing them together, and, you know, you could see that, oh, wow, he looked pissed.
Yeah, he did. He looked really stoic about it, like, ah. So it may just put a bit of a distance between Hodgson and the group. I'll be keeping an eye on it. That's when he returns.
Yeah.
Let's jump on. I want to jump onto this. I've got room in my book. Adelaide. We kind of had this whole topic assigned to them when they had that bad loss to the Jack Jumpers, and then they had that good win against Melbourne. We were going to talk about, like, how was this team built? I actually have the question, who's to blame? They had the win. I still feel founded in that we're not talking about a top 4 team. We're probably not talking about a top 6 team. I thought that win was good.
I think it's fool's gold, though.
Fool's gold. Dally and Goulding.
Yep.
Goulding, sorry. 1 of 24.
Yeah.
Dally 1 of 10, not so unlikely.
Yep.
Goulding, no field goals.
Yeah. It's like Melbourne won that game, the Dally game in Illawarra.
Yes.
They won that one out of a random result, you know, Dally scoring 30-odd.
Yeah,
and then they lost this one because it was a random result of those guys not being able to put the ball in the hole at all. So I think you just say, well, weird stuff happens sometimes.
And that game to me was a weird one, but I thought that the Adelaide Jack Jumper game was more indicative of who that team is.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was fatiguing in the front court. I thought they just couldn't grab a rebound. This fourth quarter's gone crazy and no one for Adelaide could grab it because they're so tired.
Yep.
Bairstow hasn't played that many minutes in a long time. Johnson was just struggling.
And he's
and then Kai Soto a little bit young.
Yep, yep.
What do you think of that Tasmania?
There's a lot to like about Tasmania, isn't there?
A lot.
Scott Roth. Yeah, I think we need to transition into the other question of why do we love Tassie so much?
And, we do. We have a soft spot.
I really do. And look, maybe it's because I was born there, right? Declaration there.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Tassie. I left there when I was like 2.5. But I have a couple of memories. And so therefore, they have to be my second team. But there's just something lovable about the way they go about it. I think they it's all effort. It's all grit. It's again, this is one of those stories of the poorer team, you know, going up against the big boys and competing. And I think you love an underdog story. And I don't know, there's just something. And Scott Roth's just so lovable. You know, he seems to.
You call him what? Santa Claus or the grandfather or just the father?
I'm calling him the dad of the league. That's the nickname I'm trying to work with there.
I agree with that.
He just seems like, you know. You can look up to him. You can trust him. You know, he'll put your arm around you when you need to. He'll also tell you off when you've done something bad. And you know, oh, geez, I've made Dad angry.
I disappointed him. I think with them, they work really hard. They drag games down a bit. Are they the most – they're entertaining games. Even though they're, you know, very what's the word we want to use?
Low scoring?
Iron boots. Yeah, low scoring. You know, they're not the most entertaining games. I'm entertained by them nonetheless. And I think that with him, we've had a whole thing about, you know, US coaches and G League coaches. I mean, he's a US coach who's an older guy who plays a style that's very NBL. And he's fun and he's got some pretty he's got a fairly mediocre team playing, you know, really well and plays their style. In the press conference, I said to him, like, this game, you grab 20 offensive rebounds, you force some 25 turnovers. This game's freakish. Can you replicate it? And he said, you know, in truth, teams are molding to our style. Teams are bending around us. They are responding to us, reacting to their play. And I had to agree with him. I was like, when you go to Tasmania, no game, there's been a couple of blowouts, but the games that they're in and the games that kind of work for them, it's a Tasmania Jack Jumper tone,
yep,
style.
Yep.
And they win them sometimes. And I thought they were going to hit their over, which was, you know, 6 or 7 wins. And it looks like they're going to do that pretty comfortably.
I love the fact they're building an identity. And it was that play towards the end of the game. I think it was towards the end of the game. Will Magne just dove on a ball. Like, it was dribbling out to half court, and he just dove on it. Like, did not even think. No hesitation. And I was like, wow, that's impressive for your center to just immediately dive at it.
Get on the
floor.
You
know, like, that's...
He's looked better. Has he not looked much better?
He's looked heaps better.
He's blocking shots, he's dunking, he's finishing lobs, he's got healthy. So I was patient on this. I'm quite happy to say I was still in on the guy. And I think he hasn't had huge scoring games.
No.
10, 12 points. But he's blocking a lot of shots.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see that. So they've got a local who's good. But sorry, you were saying, Andrew.
No, I think that's I just love the way that they're building a team. And that was actually one of the things I asked Scott Roth of in the press conference. I asked him, what's it like trying to build a team from scratch, you know? But they keep having these breaks. So how do you build momentum? But he was really, really good answer and talked about the, you know, they're trying to build a team that's representative of the north and south of Tasmania. And it's kind of like split by the mountains in the middle. Right. So traditionally there's quite a divide between those two. And he's saying that we're trying to build this team for everybody and really genuine and thought through. And I just think that's he's just a smart operator. And yeah. I like what they're doing. I hope to get to Tasmania and watch a game there because the crowd seems into it too.
And what I like about him is he's just all in. You saw that passion. And I feel like I'm condemning American coach of the past, but Will Weaver had that game where he went crazy, which, again, against Melbourne a couple of years ago, that felt a little bit forced. This one felt so genuine.
Yeah.
And it was such a release of energy. And so I don't think this is a coaching strategy or anything like this. I think he's really invested. And in the sense that he put McIntosh on notice, like, you're not working out for us, but
yep,
in a way that was like, no, we're pushing you to be better. And he's just really, he's got his hands in the mud. He's got his hands are not soaking in ivory liquid. He's in it.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the coaches before kind of think about their next move. And I don't think at his age, Roth is kind of like, I like it here. I'm happy. This has my full focus.
Yep.
And when he's in those press conferences, he's got that Brian Gorgian energy where he's listening to a question and giving his most honest answer. And you can kind of tell when other guys aren't or playing to the camera a little bit. Yep. Not saying that's happened, but just saying you can.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell. So that's why we like Tasmania.
Love them. Love them. I'm so glad they're in the league.
Speaking of press conferences, touch on this briefly. Simon Mitchell after the Brisbane game, we kind of got into it a little bit. And I think it looked a little bit more spectacular than it, or a little bit more inflammatory or explosive than it was.
Okay.
I asked him, I really worded this question really poorly. And when we spoke afterwards, I gave him a call and I basically said, listen, I worded the question really poorly. I asked him about Mitch Creek. Could he have gone for 50 having had 20 in the first half and only 2 in the second? He didn't like that. And I really said to him, listen, when I do these press conferences, often, unfortunately, they don't have my full focus and nor has the game had my full focus. I've got to write copy for a few sites, put out in plays. Like, it's not like the games have my full focus and I can't, like I used to in the years when we were just you and I, Andrew, doing it. You know, we could write out our questions and really think and actually confer on questions.
Yeah.
And go to Twitter and stuff. I had to kind of bumble my through. So I worded it very poorly. And then, but I gave him a call and we had a chat about it and, you know, it's all great. And he's a really good guy and really enjoy the chat. And he's an open book with staff and an open phone call that, you know, if you're for the people out there looking to write about the NBL, he's a guy you should definitely be in touch with because he will give you his time.
Yeah.
Which is the most important thing. But yeah, we kind of went back and forth. The NBL mediator had to kind of jump in and go, all right, we'll end that there. But I was a bit pissed. I was like, no, I'm not fucking backing down. But water under the bridge.
Yeah,
but, look, I don't know if you got a comment about it.
I wasn't in that presser. I watched it later and was like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. But I just want to say, like, you know, I always appreciate the opportunity to get into those things, like be a part of the press conference. I think that's awesome and it's really kind of the league and generous for them to provide us with the credentials to get in there, right? That's awesome. Having said that, sometimes, like, I don't want to go in there and just always be kumbaya. You know, like, sometimes there's going to be things where maybe the team didn't perform well. And isn't that the point of these things, is to ask questions that may be a little bit uncomfortable? So I can see both sides of the argument, you know, like, yeah, we want to praise you because you had a win and like that was excellent, but maybe there's other things that under that the fan might want to know.
And when we spoke about it out of the press, I said, if I could have reworded my question, it would have been, Creek had 20 in the first half, only 2 in the second. Why was that the case? And it seemed to coincide with a real lull in Southeast Melbourne's play. Brisbane got back to within 4 points.
Yep.
And so I was like, are the two related and why did it happen? And I got my answer to that question eventually. I just worded it really poorly the first time. I fucked up on the language. these things happen. But yeah, I agree with all that. The presses are a lot of fun and they're really good. But we're not this podcast, we're not crusaders for like negativity and we want to like ask the hard questions. No. We honestly ask questions we want to hear the answers to.
Yep.
That is all that defines my questions from top to bottom. But
and I
got some really good cues about asking them better.
Yeah, I figure if I'm curious about it, there's probably other people that are curious about it too who don't have the luxury of being able to ask the question.
Yeah, and I normally go and I quickly look at Twitter. I'm like, okay, what are people talking about? Or maybe not Facebook, but certainly Twitter. Okay, that's what people are talking about the game. Here's my question off of that. Because, you know, as much as I want to know the answer, it's also like this is a forum for everybody. But anyway, let's move on. Advanced stats.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about this. Andrew B. Price, who we really like.
Special Jam.
On the show. Yeah, Spatial Jam. I'm actually not. I don't go to the site. So I'm not a supporter. I really should be and should use the site, but I don't. I use Real GM instead.
Yep.
And I wouldn't feel right about using the site and not paying for it. I think it's now gone to subscription, but it's not saying it's not worth it. I absolutely would. I'm just not. But he put out a tweet that was something like Illawarra in the presser. Gorgon had said, we're the worst defense in the league because we concede the most points. And Andrew's comment was, why are we still using points per game as the ultimate measure of defense? So our team gives up a lot of points. They must be the worst defense. And his argument would be, well, not necessarily pace of play. So I wanted to look at the advanced stats and see if they are more effective than your traditional stats.
So when are you looking at things like, is this like points per possession and that kind of thing? Is that
more like EDIF, offensive rating, defensive rating, and then the difference between the two. And looking at EDIF, here are the top four teams. And this stat, I mean, this is a stat you never hear in the broadcast, EDIF. Offensive, and look at how accurate these advanced stats are. Number one team in EDIF, Melbourne. Second, Perth. Third, Southeast Melbourne. Fourth, Illawarra. I mean, if that isn't the top four this year, that's them.
Yep.
You don't see any change to that. Fifth is actually Tasmania Jackjumpers.
Wow.
And then sixth is Sydney. Seventh, Brisbane, Cairns, Adelaide, New Zealand bottom. So, I mean, that is as much as that's not the ladder at present, think that's how we'll probably see it towards the end. Southeast Melbourne, I could contend, could top and tail with Melbourne, and depending on Perth's COVID situation. But as far as their actual play in a vacuum, that's I have to put Adelaide below Cairns as far as they're playing, and Brisbane are so inconsistent. I even could be tempted to put them below Sydney. Tasmania are the outlier, but that just shows you who's playing well. And that's all I really wanted to say.
It's interesting. Yeah, I'm not a huge follower of the advanced stats. I used to like looking at stats in general. These days I don't even bother quite often.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, I've seen the game, I've seen how it played out, you know, like that's enough for me. But I'm also not having to scout and do all those things either. So I'm not dismissing stats as a important metric.
I think I saw that tweet and I was inspired to see like, okay, like what other stats would be good to bring up in a broadcast or in conversation. And I looked at these and was like, holy shit, they're actually a really good indication of what's going on. So I was compelled by that to bring it up.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
I've got a couple of little things that I want to talk about because, well, first I put out a tweet and I don't know if this should be a standing feature of either my Twitter feed or this show. So I'm not sure. But I did an NBL head coach power rankings. I got into the power rankings.
I did see this, but I've forgotten it. So great.
So, and it was basically as of the games I'd seen at that point in time, which is a few days.
What's the criteria? Sorry.
It's my own brain, right? So what are the criteria, yep, really? It's a read of how well the team's playing, what's their recent performance been, mm-hmm, how invested are the players, like how much do you feel like the coach has control of this team?
And chemistry.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's a real mix, and it's the eye test, right?
Go bottom top. I'm excited for this. Who's the okay, coach who's not quite
so? So keeping in mind, this is prior to a couple of games, so it needs to be updated. But number 10, bottom of the list, Chase Buford.
Wow.
Okay.
You would change that now.
I would change it now. But what I was seeing a Kings team that was all over the shop that they didn't.
The fourth quarter fades.
Yeah.
We hate that.
Running his random offense that just didn't seem to be creating results. So Chase Buford was at the bottom. Number 9, mm-hmm, CJ Bruton. Well, Adelaide.
Why?
We had a whole topic about rebuilding the 36ers, and it just seemed like he wasn't getting through to the players.
Well, they had that timeout where he's like, pay attention. That happens a lot. I'm not saying that's them not paying attention. They've checked out on the coach. I'm not saying that at all. I think it was a one-off, but I just... Also, CJ, again, Jackson McDonald. This kid, follow this kid. He's good stuff. This is not a CJ Bruton team. He didn't put this together. You know, he's inherited these guys, and, you know, Soto's young in an odd mix. Dusty Hannes is looking small and occasionally comes in and does, and had a great game that game. But
yep,
people were critical of him, and this one game doesn't nullify the six where he was mediocre. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's a cumulative work thing. So in CJ's defense, like, this is an oddly built team, and we've been saying it for a while, and we were talking about Humphreys, and
yep,
I said at the start of the year, if he plays half the season, I'll buy a steak dinner. Well, you're going hungry. Sorry. Next coach.
All right. This is Brian Goorjian at 8. Probably wow, very low for the GOAT coach. But I just see his players weren't playing defense.
Import's going a bit rogue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harvey was loving a shot. Yep. Nathan May's loving a shot. Cleveland with 1 of 7 didn't determine the fourth. Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I'm just saying, and losing games and players didn't seem bought in. So,
and giving up scores. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. And he's looking a little confused on the sidelines sometimes, Gorge. I've got to say, just watch him. It's like, he's just starting to look old.
Okay. Right. I mean, 68.
Number 7, Dan Shamir.
Shamir seems high. You would change that now. I mean, that last performance.
Yeah. Now, there is COVID in, I don't know how much COVID was in that last performance as well. But yeah, I worry about Shamir, and like, just every year they have this random team. And again, it's like, are they really paying attention to him? I'm not sure.
Well, also, everyone said, oh, but last year, oh, but they're away from COVID. Oh, yep. Well, the Perth Wildcats are away from COVID.
Yep.
I guarantee they'll still win 3/4 of their games.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Because what has been built under Dan Shamir over this time? I don't feel like it doesn't seem like there's any greater structure around New Zealand Breakers basketball than there was 3 years ago.
And the thing is, well, the locals of, other than Finn Delaney, who's kind of regressed a bit.
Yep.
Who's their structural local talent they're building around? I guess Wetzel.
Yanni
Wetzel and Finn Delaney.
Yep.
Abercrombie, they still rely on too heavily, got hurt.
Yep.
Will McDowell White is a guy, I'm wishy-washy. I'm like, you know,
got a few good games.
Would he be on the third team? Yeah.
Faded, yeah.
But did they recruit over the top of him is the argument. You know, they've got him and what's his name? Who we like? Peyton Siver.
Yep.
You know, they recruit over the top of him. So, yeah, again, yeah, you're right. Like, what, you know, what are your local pillars? And they're not really there.
Yeah. Number 6, so, Adam Ford.
Yep.
You know, just middle of the pack, like Cairns, middle of the
pack. I got
a
bit more time for Ford. The team's not great. They spent a lot of time on the sidelines, but still played pretty well in that loss.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, where else are you going to put
him? You know, what's Jawai doing? What's he thinking? He's getting 8 minutes a game or something like that.
Yeah, I've seen the last.
Number 5, Simon Mitchell. Like, I still don't feel like they've worked out their offensive patterns.
It's funny. So we had this long chat, and basically his comment was, like, we're top of the ladder, 6-2, I want to say. And he was making the point that a lot of the wins they've had have had all but. But it's like, we still won them, is his debate. And, you know, when they beat New Zealand It was, oh, they had COVID and the coach was out. All right. And then Brisbane, oh, we lost. Well, we beat them, you know. And, oh, yeah, they got close. But then we beat them in the fourth quarter badly and the last one that from the other time. And so, yeah, I mean, it's your list. Yeah. I don't.
Well, and it's a little dated now. Again, it might have moved.
Yeah.
And then because above him, it does look dated. James Duncan. Like, I really liked what the Brisbane Bullets were doing. I'd said that they were no longer boring. I was sort of getting very excited about them. And then they go and lay an egg in that last game. And, you know,
well,
Robert Franks looked disengaged. And so that was disappointing. Because up until that point, I was really in on James Duncan. He seemed like a real smooth operator.
I'm going to give a further question. And taking away from James Duncan, and apologies for distracting from the coaching rankings, but is this a Lamar Patterson team? And the reason why I say it is Brad and Body had a podcast just recently with Jason Kadee. I really encourage people to listen to it. It was very good. And in it, they do that word association towards the end of the guest. They say a name and then that person describes it. And Jason Kadee was asked about Lamar Patterson. Oh, Lamar Patterson, what's your thoughts? And he goes, best import teammate, but and great player when his mindset is right.
Huh.
It's Jason Kadee.
Wow.
So what I took from that is, okay, sometimes his mindset must be wrong. And although this game, he had a good game. He had 26. He was the only guy in double figures for Brisbane. But I'm still like, this is Patterson. Sometimes it's game to game, perhaps. Sometimes it's certainly season to season where he was, you know, second in MVP voting and then cut by New Zealand and then back. And, you know, is that what this guy is? Which in the NBL, if you're sort of good one game, bad the next, feeling it, not feeling it, and that's only good enough for fifth place, which is where they've perennially been with him, fourth, fifth, sixth. So that was just Kadee. People out there, you smart people, you go and listen, you tell me if you came to the same conclusion. Who's next?
Number three, Scott Morrison. So this was after, I think it was after the two Illawarra wins, but prior to the Sydney loss.
One of those Illawarra wins was really good. Like it was on the road.
Yep.
They just got the bad news about COVID and they really had to gut it out. I thought one of them, I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to make the grand final. But then they came right back down.
Yeah, it started. It was looking at that point that they'd all started to figure it out, but no, they haven't.
So. I think I would have had Scott Morrison higher. I know you did this a while ago. COVID, they've got the hardest COVID situation, even worse than New Zealand, perhaps. Probably
not. Oh, I don't know about that.
Second to them. And it's brutal. Yep. And they're navigating it. It's going to have a huge impact. Who's next?
Number two, Scott Roth. He's got the Jack Jumpers, Planner Brand. They're diving on loose balls. They're defensive up and in.
As far as spend versus outcome, input versus output, EDIF, very high on Scott Roth.
He just needs to realize that they're not going anywhere with Mikhail McIntosh in that team. As much as I know he says we win together, we lose together, and I'm sorry, he's just losing that guy.
Yeah, I saw it. I think he airballed a three late. Oh, dear. And a team that really needs scoring.
Yeah,
they've got defense. Yeah. They've got Magne and McDaniel. There's enough team defense there, Kenyon, so on and so forth.
Yep.
They need a scorer. So,
So that leaves leaves at number one, Dean Vickerman. Yeah, he's doing everything he could be asked. He's got his identity stamped on this team. He's playing that he's got. Basically, remember how he used to coach in New Zealand? He's doing that again with this team.
They're playing a level of defense.
I was down on this team at the beginning of the season. Like, I really didn't rate them. And
I'm gonna try and pull Kenyon back in. actually, what are you saying before I pull you?
Well, back? I'm saying I didn't rate them. You about that? I was saying they got no depth. They got old guys. Agata as the import was a total unknown, and he sort of remains that way, sort of very hot and cold. But I think what I didn't anticipate was Mason Peatling really getting good. Yeah, JLA. Well, I sort of figured JLA a bit. Okay, Mason Peatling. I didn't know that Hook Porty would be such a power, and
he's amazing.
And Jack White, I kind of just forgot. I keep saying it. He's the modern day Andrew Vlahov.
Yeah, he's really, really impactful, punchy and strong and finishes tough. Yeah, JLA is the big one, though, for me, because he's jumped from sort of sixth man to, is he going to be NBL first or second team? I think second team for sure.
Who else? Him and Wetzel. Who else is he up against at the center spot? first?
Wetzel, like, as far as bigs go, like Johnson, Delaney, Vic Law's a big, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So he's still going to struggle a bit, but he's right up there. He's in the top 15 players in the NBL.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
And now I didn't see that coming. That's a huge jump.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who was sixth man. Okay, that makes you the best.
Yeah.
35th best guy in the league. Well, now he's, you know, top 10, 15. So he's spectacular. But as far as, I will say this about Melbourne. Strength of schedule. They've played Illawarra and won. Big, big win. They beat Perth? No, who'd they beat? Who's the other good team? Southeast Melbourne?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
No, they lost to Southeast
Melbourne. No, they lost. God, this
without
this,
Golding. This, they lost to Southeast Melbourne.
This is the problem with this roster. It's been going on for so long, for so few games.
But here's the thing. You said, I mean, are they old bodies? Well, they didn't all of a sudden get any younger, Andrew. Like, and we're only a quarter of the way through the season.
Mm.
Now, that is still yet to be a factor, or could still be a factor. I think that they've had a pretty easy schedule. A lot of New Zealand, a lot of Sydney when they were injured and piecing things together. And they've had a couple of good wins. They're allowed to play. And they haven't been affected by COVID as much as everyone else. They've been in Melbourne. Their games have been here and there. They've been, not that they haven't been affected, but they've been one of the least affected by COVID, is my understanding.
Yep.
So, I'm still kind of like, okay, done well to this point, but that game against Adelaide looked really poor. And when a couple of their things don't go well, they look, well, they lose to a team like Adelaide.
Yep. No offense. But remember, this is just the coaching power rankings. This isn't the team power rankings.
Apologies. So, apologies. Yeah. No, true. That was Andrew Canyon's coaching power rankings.
Yep.
Where are we going next?
I got two more topics because I'm just topicked up, mate.
These are quick.
I'm conscious of time. People got better things to do than listen to us talk all day.
That's true.
Thanks, mate. Wildcats, 40-year team.
Who you got?
They are going through a process of picking their best. Should I give you my team?
Do.
All right, spoil the big special occasion. Okay, so it was announced today that Trevor Gleeson was the coach. Fair enough. Can't argue with that.
Yep. Nope.
I would have, okay, should I start on the bench or should I start the starting five?
Go starting five.
Starting five, okay. James Crawford, Alabama slammer.
Yep.
At the center.
Of course.
Sean Redditch.
Ooh.
Scoring machine, as they like to say. Andrew Vlahov.
Is this done on like what would be the best five to put on the floor against a team from outer space?
That's what I'm taking
Perth
as.
Perth City itself?
Yeah. I think that's how they're doing it.
The most accolade five. Okay,
that's how they're doing it too. It's like you got to win this game. Otherwise, Earth is destroyed.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, James Crawford, Sean Redditch, Andrew Vlahov, and then in the backcourt, I got Bryce Cotton and I got Ricky Grace.
Yeah, okay. Who could possibly knock on? Who did you contend with anyone else coming into that five?
Into that five? And not really.
Scott Fisher?
It would be point guard would probably be the biggest one. Do you go Ricky Grace or maybe Damian Martin?
No, Ricky.
But Ricky was, I mean, don't forget how good he is. He was.
That's not a debate with me. Yep. I'm afraid so. Scott Fisher?
Yeah.
Wasn't there. I was there for a while, but.
So I can give you my bench.
Give me the bench. Yeah,
okay. Let's go to the bench. So Scott Fisher's on the bench.
Yep.
Kevin Lish.
Of course.
Damian Munn.
Of course.
Which leaves two players really, really difficult. These are the hardest two players to choose. I went Jesse Wagstaff.
You know, this was Boddy gave me his 10, and this you're marrying up.
This is really hard. Jesse Wagstaff, but he's got six titles, and he's been there through thick and thin, and, you know.
Yeah, I think he's.
You know he's going to step on and hit a couple of threes and, you know,
who's your last
head
guy?
Faking drive to the rim this year. This is the hardest one of all. I've gone Matt Knight. His backup center.
Not Nick Kay. You're not going to have Nick Kay to play for Earth. I disagree. I'd have Nick Kay.
You know, and then the other one.
Well, how many titles? Two titles?
And then the other one is Paul Rogers. He didn't get a look in either. He was league MVP.
Yeah.
But I've gone Matt Knight.
Yeah, that.
I like Matt Knight. He's a good defensive player. He can step out, knock down a long.
Nick Kay.
He just wasn't there. Like, how many games did Nick play?
But you were
Nick Kay play.
He was pretty good. He was NBL first team both the years and won the title.
Matt Knight playing defense. Like,
yeah, I get it, but. No, I would contend with that. I'm not saying definitively I'm saying, Nick Kay? Niquet was really good. He's like the sixth best player on the Olympic team. Anyway, maybe Berger's in the top five. Fair enough. That's a good top, good 10. I can't dispute that. Who are the real omissions that were bad? Tough ones.
So Paul Rogers was difficult, really difficult.
Mike Ellis? Was he?
Well, Mike Ellis, yeah. Guy? Mike Ellis, he was my childhood hero, Mike Ellis.
Right.
Yeah. Legend of the team, but just his skill level compared to these other guys, he's not there. He could be the manager, team manager.
Ennis was only there for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
He was obviously in the team talent wise.
He's the halftime dunk contest.
Yeah, fair enough.
Performer.
Yeah. Ennis, Kay, you left off, obviously we spoke about that. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Cal.
Yeah, not long enough. Tiny Pinder. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Kind of just feel a little uncomfortable.
Let's skip over that.
Trevor Torrence.
Yeah, TT.
It didn't really ever do that much. It was,
I mean, at the expense of who?
Yeah.
No, fair play. No, good team. Again, at NBL Pocket Pod, at Andrew Canyon more so.
Come at me, Red Army.
Yeah, do it. You got one more topic.
I got one more. Jalen Adams, Sydney Kings. Is he a sneaky MVP candidate?
Missed too many games.
You think?
He's missed 5 games already or something.
Did you see him play that last game, though? The last few games. He is excellent.
I think he's shooting play. He can.
I think he could be better than Bryce Cotton. Not better than Bryce Cotton, overall, but I feel like Bryce Cotton's maybe on a slide downwards, whereas Jalen Adams seems to be on an upward trajectory.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think he's played 2 games. He's come in hot. Now teams get a look at him and can scout him a bit better. Whereas Cotton, they've had tape on for 3 years.
True.
Still got no answer.
Am I getting a little overexcited?
I think, but that's fine. I think, Adams. Oh, yeah, I mean, he had a good game. No doubt about it. He can shoot and he's young and he's all over the floor. But yeah, he missed a lot of games already. Mm. They're below 500, And do we think that's going to be a 500 team? Are they in the top four? Are they going to eclipse either Perth or Melbourne or Southeast Melbourne or Illawarra for the top four?
No.
Hard to win the MVP when you don't do that.
Fair point.
So I'm on that basis, I'm going to say, cool, you're Jazz Canyon. But I like the question. Right. Well, I think we're out of here, are we?
Yeah. Well, just remember, everybody, the worst tipping competition in the league. The most unreliable fixturing system in this tipping competition. You never know who you're actually tipping.
And fantasy, where you're tipping, who's playing, what? It's just a farce. And then fantasy, I have not looked at my fantasy team in a month. I'm just like, when are these games? But what round are we in? What's happening? What, there's 3 games on a Sunday? This is outrageous. So if you can make sense of it. But jump on there if you'd just like to. Honestly, at this point, it is something to do in the 2 minutes. The first 2 minutes of sitting on the toilet, it's just like, oh, okay, I'll have a think about that. Yep. That's it. It's the only merit in it. Sorry.
Okay. Now I've got one more question to end it off, Joe.
Do it.
We've got round 10 coming up. I don't know if you've got the fixtures in front of you.
Nope.
Well, that's not going to help. What is?
I'll bring them up though.
I want to ask you, what is the million games that are scheduled for round 10, what is the game that jumps out to you as the one you want to watch?
You've. I'm just bringing it up in front of me. You go first.
Okay. Well. It's tough.
Nope. Oh, okay.
I think I might be waiting for the final game of the round. I think I want to see
Phoenix Hawks.
Illawarra Hawks, Sydney, Southeast Melbourne. I want to know if the Hawks can straighten things up. And I want to know if Southeast Melbourne can actually get some wins against their peers. Yeah.
To me, it's a question of Tasmania, Sydney, only because it's in Tasmania. And I'm like, they couldn't wear down the Kings, could they? The Kings are a team that I think would be very susceptible to the Jack Jumper charm.
Yeah.
Perth plays someone interesting. Perth plays Southeast Melbourne.
Yeah, well, in Melbourne. That could be another interesting game, like the Illawarra one, potentially.
And then Illawarra, Southeast Melbourne. I am going to go with, I don't hate that Tasmania-Sydney game, but no, I'm going to go with, the fact that Perth are on the road, COVID, that would be a good test for the Phoenix, but I don't think you can categorically say like, oh, that's when Southeast Melbourne are coming up against, you know, the might of the Wildcats. Yeah. The Wildcats are a little bit bruised. They're going to be without a few players. Oh, well, just Hodgson. You know, are they? Is this a true test for the Phoenix? I think whenever you play Perth, it is. I'm going to say that game.
Okay.
Phoenix, Perth in Melbourne. You know, remember when Phoenix got destroyed by them over in Perth? And that's your test. I think the Hawks, oh, it's a good game too. But no, I'm going with Perth, South Melbourne.
There you go. So, Southeast Melbourne, Phoenix, they're the team of the round.
Mm. All right. Well, that's the last. You're going with the last game of the round, though, Illawarra, South Melbourne. So, my game, February 5th, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. Your game, Monday, 7:30. That'd be a nice time slot too. That'd be a fun Monday night.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're done.
There we go. It's been good to get back in the seat.
Yeah. Start totally. And it'd be fun to see what happens to Hodgson tomorrow.
Bad habits.
But lastly, as we go, we're going to play a recording here from, guys come up a bunch in this, Jackson McDonald. This was recorded about a week or two ago. It's about Delhi. It's about stats. It's about spend. We'll let that play out and then play out the theme tune. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Patreon, Twitter, tipping. Here's something. Booktopia.
Hey.
Remember that?
That's right.
Whoa. Use the link in the description. Buy a book from Booktopia. And if you're going to buy a book, buy A Type of Life by Body Nodge. I'm at chapter 13.
Oh, you're ahead of me now.
Soon to finish it. Yeah, I'll be getting Body on the show. We'll do it together. And we'll talk about the book and everything stemming from it. But it's a good read. I've enjoyed it. And I think a lot of you would as well. So do that indeed. That's it. Andrew, you have the final word.
Goodbye.
I love Moneyball. No, not how big sporting clubs win all the time through paying big money each and every year. I'm talking about the movie about the Oakland Athletics 2002 MLB season and their famous 20-game win streak. A story about how you can be just as good as other teams while spending on a much smaller budget, while using statistics to win games. My favourite scene in this masterpiece is the scene when Billy Beane, who is the GM of the A's, and the managing team put together their roster for the upcoming season. Beane and his new assistant GM, Peter Brand, look for guys that get on base at a fraction of the price than what they would pay their departing stars. Get them in cheap, get them to do the same job. Even though all the old heads are looking outside the stat line and more about their decline or off-field issues, Beane, played by Brad Pitt, says that they would be doing just as good as a job because they
get on base.
Now you're thinking, Jackson, this is the NBL Pocket Podcast, not the MLB fence swinging radio show. Why are you talking about a baseball film when this show is about basketball? Here's where I get to my point. Melbourne United made an off-season splash by signing Matthew Dellavedova, an Australian basketball legend, even though his best years are far behind him. Yes, even though his competitiveness and heart for winning is still there, his concussion and general injury issues of recent times have seen a decline in his game. Oh, and it's been rumored that they're paying him around $700,000 a year. $700,000. That's around half of their salary cap. And you add in what they're paying Golding, and well, that's a whole lot of your salary cap spent on only two players. This shows also why they lack a fair bit of roster depth on their bench, signing guys like Prusa and Dalton, even though they are great in their own right, instead of another two imports. In the thick of all this is Mitch McCarron, a player younger than Delhi, in his prime, who just won a championship with United as their starting point guard, who's great defensively, who can shoot better than Delhi, and United let him walk to Adelaide just days after winning a championship. Because basically, he's not a name like Delhi. United could pay two to three Mitch McCarrons with what they're paying Dellavedova. So let's break this down, just like Moneyball, with stats. All these numbers are from the great Andrew Price and his website Spatial Jam, far superior to whatever the NBL website has. The NBL should really give him a job. At the time of recording, these are their current stats. Dellavedova is averaging in his first four games 10 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 turnovers in 27 minutes. McCarron is averaging in his first five games 7 points, 5 assists, 7 rebounds, 1.5 steals, half a block, and 2 turnovers in 34 minutes. Well, you can argue that both are better than the other. We need to look a bit deeper than just the box score. How about their PER, or player efficiency rating? Our Lord and Savior Wikipedia states that PER strives to measure a player's per minute performance while adjusting for pace. Basically, if you don't know what any of that means, it means the higher number is good and a lower number is bad. Dellavedova's PER is 21.7, while McCarron's is 15.8. Now you're thinking, I thought McCarron's would be a whole lot higher because he had more rebounds. But the biggest component of PER is minutes played. Delly plays less than McCarron, therefore his PER is higher. Just like every stat, PER isn't everything though. What about their offensive rating? McCarron has an O rating of 99.4. That's pretty ugly for a guy who has a great offensive package. Well, what's Delly's? Dellavedova's O rating is 104.8. Much better than McCarron's current figure, but still not the best. Average is what I'd call it, but he, like McCarron, doesn't need to have a high offensive rating to be impactful. Now, what about the other end of the court? The defensive end is where these guys shine. Defensive rating is like offensive rating. However, the lower the number is, the better. McCarron's numbers will be way better here, right? McCarron has a D rating of 108.1. Well, that's not the best. What about Delly's? Surely his stats isn't so much better than McCarron's. Delly has a defensive rating of 86.1. He has by far the best defensive rating in the league for a guard. While I'm reading these stats off a screen, when you watch the games, they aren't that much different, except Delly has a much worse shooting ability than McCarron. Dellavedova's jump shot is as messy as the state of Ublek. The story is this. Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Coke is always the number one choice when debating about the two. When you're offered a Coke or a Pepsi, 9 out of 10 times you always choose a Coke. Even though it's marketed more, it has more of a global brand, it's perceived better than Pepsi. Even though deep down inside, you know Pepsi is better. That is Delly and McCarron. Dellavedova has global fame, while McCarron is only known inside Australia. Delly is the new face of the league, while McCarron is rarely marketed, even though he receives a bunch of praise inside the Aussie basketball bubble. But you just think, McCarron may be better than Delly. Short term, yes, Dellavedova might be better, but McCarron is out there for longer, and McCarron will be running around for Adelaide for the next 3 years, and with Delly, that is a bit uncertain. With all this being said, has it been worth it for United to bring in Delly instead of keeping McCarron and having a more well-balanced roster? Can't give a definitive answer yet because the season just started. But at the moment, probably not. Again, back to Moneyball. The big theme of the
he gets on base
scene is that Bean brings in three players that can do the same job statistically than their star that is leaving. How much are United paying Delly again? 700 grand. You can afford to bring in Mitch McCarron and upgrade two of your bench players to imports with that type of money. Basically, United have done a reverse Moneyball. Instead of bringing guys on cheaper deals than their guys that are leaving, which they have kind of sort of done, they've paid a whole lot on Delly and paid around the minimum on lower bench guys. Even though Delly is going to be great for putting bums in seats and marketing, I mean, the league has him doing half of their ads, McCarron provides close to the same on-court as Delly. United already had Golding as the face of the team, so why did they need Delly in the first place? But what do they both do but McCarron does at a fraction of the price?
Oh boy. Guys, check your reports or I'm going to point a P.